Our next case is A23-0210, In re the estate of Joanne, I hope I pronounced this correctly, Eklund. So the parties can start to assemble. I am aware, based on the letter from the Attorney General, that the appellants will be splitting their time. Hennepin County will have 9 minutes, the commissioner 6 minutes, and then on rebuttal, Hennepin County will have 3 minutes and the commissioner 2 minutes. So this matter is being live streamed. Whenever you're ready, counsel, just approach the microphone, adjust it to your level. It does go up and down. We spent $200,000 to make that do that. So somebody should use it. And then just adjust the microphone to your level. And please tell us who you are in a loud, clear voice.
Good morning. May it please the court and counsel. My name is Matthew Huff, and I represent Appellant Hennepin County Department of Human Services. This court should reverse the district court's interpretation that the plain language of Minnesota Statute 256B.15, Subdivision 2A, limits a medical assistance recovery claim to the amount of long-term services actually rendered to a beneficiary for three reasons. First, the district court's plain meaning interpretation failed to incorporate and consider the definition of medical assistance as it is defined in Chapter 256B. Second, the district court's plain meaning interpretation erroneously viewed the statute's use of the word render to modify the word services rather than the defined phrase of medical assistance. And third, in the event that this court determines that the statute is ambiguous, the canons of construction favor an interpretation that allows for the recovery of medical assistance capitation payments attributable to long-term services and supports.
Counsel, before you get further, I just want to, I think, reiterate a point I think you've already made, but I want to make sure that we're talking about the same thing. As I understand, the county asserted its reimbursement claim under Minnesota statute, right? 256B.15.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So we're not interpreting or applying federal law at this point. The claim for recovery is grounded in Minnesota law and what Minnesota law requires.
I think that that's partially correct, Your Honor, and here's why. Medical assistance recovery is governed by both federal and state law. Federal law basically dictates how states are to implement medical assistance based on each state kind of gets to decide how they want to implement it, but there are higher level federal regulations that govern it. And so, but I think that in this case, I think the fight, if you will, is based on Minnesota law and the interpretation of Minnesota Statute 256B.
Thank you.
One of the things I wanted to maybe start by addressing. Not necessarily, Your Honor. First,
Minnesota law that applies, it's an obligation of the Minnesota legislature to come up with a schematic that meets the federal's requirements. Is that a fair statement?
Your Honor, I think that appellant intervener will be able to address that issue a little more thoroughly, but I think that Minnesota law does have to be in compliance with federal law in that regard. And if it isn't, then that could potentially be a problem. Again, that's addressed
to be solved by who? The legislature, correct?
That would be correct, Your Honor, yes.
So the fact that we have this possibility that you've raised, does that have any impact at all on interpreting what Minnesota law is?
It could, Your Honor. In this case, Hennepin County is arguing primarily that the statute is unambiguous and that the district court erred in its unambiguous interpretation. However, if the court does determine that the statute is ambiguous, that is something that the court can consider as one of the canons of construction for interpreting the statute. No, Your Honor, it did not.
Just interpreted the plain words of the Minnesota statute.
That's correct. And so the county...
So why don't you lose then?
And that's a good question, Your Honor. The reason...
Well, probably isn't, but it's the one I asked.
I know. So. The reason that the district court erred from the county's perspective is that it did not consider the defined term of medical assistance in Chapter 256B. So that definition is found at Minnesota Statute 256B.02 Subdivision 8. And it is medical assistance means payment of part or all of the cost of care and services. Notably, while the district court's order uses the phrase medical assistance by my count at least 31 times, nowhere in the order itself does it refer to the statutory definition of medical assistance. And that's significant in this case because medical assistance is defined as a payment. Additionally,
so you want
will be a payment on behalf of a medical assistance beneficiary. It's part of or all of the cost of care and services. So,
it's costs of care.
And services.
All right. So how does this proposal that you're bringing forward fit that definition? It's not the cost of care, is it?
No, Your Honor. And so what I would point to...
The cost of service?
Your Honor, I would point to... It's the cost of care and services. So the argument is that it's both, and here's why. So Minnesota administrative regulations define the term capitation. So that's found at Rule 9500.1451, subpart 4. And that definition is a method of payment for health services that involves a monthly per-person rate paid on a prospective basis to a health plan. And so I think when you look at the defined term of medical assistance and you look at the term capitation and how it's been defined by administrative rule, capitation is a payment that is part of medical assistance.
Well, it's covered by medical assistance, but does that mean that it is for a services rendered? I mean, it seems to me the real rubber hits the road when we start talking about looking back to Subdivision 2 that seems to tie the reimbursable claim to services, listed services that are delivered to a recipient. How is payment of the cost of a managed care organization a service that's actually delivered to a recipient?
I think, Your Honor, maybe what you're getting at is the county's argument about how the word rendered fits into the statute here, right? So the statute is that medical assistance that's rendered, and so the county's position is that the medical...
Rendered to the recipient for... nursing facility services, home and community-based services, related hospital and prescription drug services.
Right, and so the payment in this case provided the recipient with the coverage for those services. So that would be the county's position. One additional...
Why would the legislature want to... It's $65,000 for, you know, the premiums, my word, not yours, and $8,000 for the services. So the legislature wants to encourage overpayment of premiums versus the delivery of services to the elderly to the tune of, what, five times what was actually rendered? I can't believe the legislature wants to do that. And then compound it by taking the home away from the surviving spouse to pay for services that weren't rendered. That strikes me as being illogical. Why am I wrong, Mr. Huff?
Well, Your Honor, I'd like to address, so you talked about the two amounts in this case, right? The $66,000 and change and then the $8,800 or so. And so the $66,000 was made on the beneficiary's behalf, and it was capitation payments that consisted of long-term care and services and supports and is based on actuarial analysis performed by the state. And so it's a portion of the entire amount of capitation payments that were made on recipients' behalf.
That I presume includes premiums.
Yes, Your Honor. The $8,800 is an amount that...
I believe me, we all understand how health insurance works. However, in this case, I find it odd that the legislature would want to, I mean, that seems to be an incentive to be inefficient and get money for things that weren't done. You think about that when it comes time for rebuttal. So we'll now hear for counsel for the commissioner.
Thank you, Your Honors, and may it please the court, Emily Anderson, Assistant Attorney General, here on behalf of the Commissioner of Human Services, who intervened in this case to argue specifically that the district court erred by failing to consider the federal Medicaid recovery statute's requirement that the state recover medical assistance payments made on behalf of Ms. Eklund. Hennepin County's full claim represents the actuarially determined cost of capitation payments made for long-term services and supports for Ms. Eklund. That full claim should have been allowed because federal law requires the state to recover those capitation payments. I agree, Your Honor, but the state statutes in this case implement federal recovery statutes.
That's assuming that the legislature got it correct.
That would be assuming the legislature got it correct, but it is certainly something that I think we touched on when you were talking with Mr. Huff was that the consequences of reading statutes is a canon of interpretation that the Supreme Court has counseled that this court can and should use. It is not disputed, or it can't really be disputed, that federal law says that if Minnesota state statute contravenes or does not meet federal Medicaid recovery requirements, that federal Medicaid dollars will go away.
And that's a matter between the state and the federal government, isn't it? I mean, is that a matter between the federal government and the estate of the Eklund?
It's a matter between the state and the federal government, but it should counsel this court's interpretation of the state statutes because, again, the consequences of interpretation is a canon of construction that matters.
If we find that the statute's ambiguous.
If you find that the statute is ambiguous.
Do you believe the Minnesota statute's ambiguous?
I don't believe that the Minnesota statute is ambiguous, and I don't believe that the federal statute is ambiguous, and I believe that the Minnesota statute interprets and implements federal law. I believe that because it defines medical assistance functionally the same way as the federal Medicaid statutes do, and that is as payment for cost of part of all of the services. I want to get to something that you were asking Mr. Huff again, and how does this cost of care and services, payment for the cost, relate to this? And Judge Connolly, I think your analysis or your analogy to insurance is correct. The cost of care, as we all know, if you go to an in-network provider, the cost of your care is different than if you go to an out-of-network provider. Your cost of care, if you go to a covered service, a covered in-network provider, is different than if you are uninsured and go to that same provider and get the same service. The capitation payment that the state makes every month for this managed care coverage is part of the cost of the service that actually comes out the other side on the bill, because it's a negotiated cost between the managed care organization and the state based on the existence of coverage.
So is the idea that these capitation payments for, my word, premiums, the $65,000 is to cover everybody else who's even worse off than the Eklunds?
In a way, that is a risk. I do think that there is value in having coverage, and we, I think, know from the record that there's value in having coverage, because Ms. Eklund renewed her application for this medical assistance coverage every year.
And she obviously qualified for it.
She obviously qualified, and you do, as a recipient of medical assistance, have to renew your application every year. This isn't just something that continued on one application that she made in 2006 every year. Every year she said, I continue to want the medical assistance coverage that's provided. So
what? I mean, somehow, so that means she agrees to capitation coverage?
Yes, it's a notice that
she's going to apply by the statute, and the question becomes, what does the statute say about it? I mean, I understand why you want this money. It makes sense. But the question is whether this exact statute dealing with medical assistance rendered to recipients is what you want it, or what you and Mr. Huff want it to be. And, you know, what if we look at 256B15, which says a claim shall be filed if medical assistance was rendered for a person who was 55 years of age or older and received medical assistance services that consisted of long-term care services. That doesn't say, well, that doesn't help you, does it?
I think it does, because medical assistance is not defined as services. It's defined as payment. So,
but this says medical assistance services. It doesn't say medical assistance. So services must mean something.
I think that I think that in that part of the statute, it is limiting by the long-term services and supports. And we agree that full capitation payments are not recoverable. It is the part of capitation payments that are attributable to the specific long-term services and supports. We just know, and the district court found, and that hasn't been challenged here, that the actuarial analysis accurately did that. It has already limited it to the type of covered services. The actual amount of capitation payments that the state paid on behalf of Ms. Eklund is far larger than $66,000. This is only the portion that's recoverable as long-term services and supports, which is the narrowing part of the definition. But medical assistance continues to mean payments, not services. And that's in both the state definition and the federal definition. The payments here were capitation payments, which affect the cost of each covered service that she received and go to provide the managed care coverage and the services that she received. And the canon against surplusage, I think, also counsels us that this has to be correct, because there are 2.5 clauses in the definition of medical assistance. It is payment for the cost of care and services, payment for the care and services themselves, and the half will be or both. So payment for care and services seems to be fee-for-service payments, which is what the estate is considering should be covered, and I think what the district court found should be covered. But the payment for the cost has to mean something different, or else we're reading out language from the statute. Payment for the cost here.
Or you're reading in language to the statute in your interpretation.
I understand.
If we agree with you, there's an argument that you're reading language into the statute as well, isn't it?
I don't think that's true, because, again, we are going for what the payments for the cost of care and services are. Again, the cost of care and services here is affected by the existence of managed care coverage and is capitation, and that is paid for by capitation. And that's also how CMS interprets it. CMS, which is the federal agency tasked with understanding Medicaid, I see I'm out of time. Do you mind if I finish this answer?
Yes,
just
go right ahead, Ms. Anderson.
Okay. CMS, which interprets...
We're not bound by agency interpretations, are we?
You are not bound by them. They are due deference when they are consistent with the plain language
just
of the statute.
We're not bound by attorney general opinions, right?
Just like that, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Anderson.
Thank you.
We'll now hear for counsel for the respondent, please.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. I represent the personal representative of the estate of Joanne Eklund. It's refreshing to hear both the...
Could you tell us who you are?
Oh, sorry. That would help. Susie King.
Thank you, Ms.
Your
King.
Honor. Thank you. Minnesota statute, in compliance with federal law, limits the recovery of medical assistance to only the amount of medical assistance rendered to recipients 55 years or older that consisted of nursing facility services, home and community-based services, and related hospitals and prescription drug services.
To the extent that medical assistance is broadly confined to the cost of care and services, you know, why is the county and the commissioner, why are they wrong when they say the cost of these services by kind of definition include the capitation payments, because that they wouldn't have received the services but for discounts negotiated and all of those things?
Because, Your Honor, they're not reading the statute in its entirety. If we look at the definition of medical assistance, which is mirror image at the federal side and the Minnesota side, the definition of medical assistance is defined payment of part or all of the costs of the following care and services or the care and services themselves, comma, or both. So if you read those, there are three options. You can have payment for the cost of the care and the services, you can have the care and the services themselves, or you can have all. And so by looking at that clear definition, to the earlier point, The use of medical assistance does not mean the costs themselves. The use in the Minnesota statute means that medical assistance is defining those services that are rendered to the recipient that are limited to nursing facility services, home and community-based services, and related hospital and prescription drugs. The district court correctly found that appellant and intervener, that federal law requires them to file an estate recovery, that federal law recovers or requires the appellant to seek that recovery. But Minnesota law, 256B1.5, limits the availability of what they can recover. Under federal law, there is an option to...
Why would the legislature want to do that?
Well, Your Honor, if we go back to... It was an intentional decision by the legislature, although we can acknowledge...
Stick it to the federal government?
I don't think it's to stick it to the federal government. I think, frankly, it was a policy decision that... that historically the Department of Human Services has been able to recoup large amounts of sums from estates such as my client without any sort of liability or cost-prevented measures. The state has made an intentional decision to take on this role of calculating a capitation payment to shift the risk when they employ a managed care organization, in this instance Medica, known as an MCO. The state takes that risk and shifts it to MCO. Sometimes the risk is in the upswing, and MCO ends up paying hundreds of thousand dollars more than the state paid in capitation payments. In this instance, the state paid out more than what the MCO was required. That risk shifting is, one, not consistent with the terms of the statute, but more importantly, that is not my client's responsibility. And if we look at the prior legislative intent of this statute, I think that's telling. Prior to 2017, the statute took what's called an all-cost approach. It didn't specify the recovery of the capitation payments. It specifically said that the claim, and this was prior in 256B1.15, the claim shall include only the total amount of medical assistance rendered. It doesn't specify that consisted of long-term care services. So prior to that enactment in 2017, Minnesota was known as an all-costs approach, similar to Wisconsin, where there was not a differentiating between what classified as long-term care services. Even more so, this state plan was eventually sent to CMS and approved on December 20th of 2016. So CMS has approved that the language in 256B.15, as we see it now, is consistent and compliant with federal law.
But they would interpret it differently than you advocate.
They do, except, Your Honor...
You want the money.
They do, but except I don't necessarily agree with the court that intervener is interpreting it differently. Intervener's own client, as a result of this legislature, sent out a bulletin, a DHS, Department of Human Services, bulletin dated January 25th, 2017. And again, we get here if we want to look at the canons of interpretation of the statute. I maintain that the statute's unambiguous. That being said, and I quote from this bulletin that was sent within the department that is administering the estate recovery, and I quote, "The law change limited the type of medical assistance services that local agencies could recover in a state claim if the deceased enrolled received medical assistance services on or after January 1st, 2014. Specifically, the law change stated that local agencies could only collect the cost of long-term services and supports, otherwise known as LTSS, that a medical assistance enrollee received from January 1st, 2014 and thereafter."
But I think their argument is received. When you receive something, you're receiving not only the actual cost of the service, but you're receiving the premium or capitation payment that allowed that charge to be...
That's their argument, because they're taking a view of the statute that is limited. Again, the definition of medical assistance, I strongly urge the court to check the definition that is being referenced by both appellant and intervener because there are words missing. They're not trying to add words. They are intentionally omitting the options of the definitions. The definition of medical assistance mirrors the federal law in the Minnesota law. We have that. That.
Are you saying cavitation is not authorized under the federal law either?
No, I'm not saying that, Your Honor. I'm saying that the portion of the capitation payment that is attributable to these long-term care services is recoverable. The state of Minnesota has made an intention that they are going to administer their medical assistance policy or program by using capitation payments. That's where they use an actuarial table and say, on average, you are entitled, this is how much it's going to cost. No one's disputing that calculation. What we're disputing is that Minnesota law, specifically 256B.15, does not allow them to recover that entire capitation amount. The decision to go towards the capitation payment shifts the risk away from the state onto individuals such as myself. They have made a decision that they're going to shift the risk and put it towards impoverished individuals as myself. And unfortunately, that's not allowable under the statute. If it was the intent of the statute that all of the payments be recoverable, whether they're attributable to long-term care or whether they're just simply administrative costs, the legislature wouldn't have or shouldn't have changed the language in the statute of 2016. We see other statutes that are referenced, Wisconsin, for example. That's an.
You're all arguing that it's, the statute's not ambiguous, and yet you're talking about all of the changes that have taken place, which is a way of handling ambiguity. I'm confused as to where we're at. But let's assuming we disagree. Let's assuming we conclude that it is ambiguous. What do you know about the legislative history? Do we know what the legislators talked about as they made these changes in 2017?
Not specifically in which to articulate to the court. I can tell you, generally speaking, the sentiment around that time was a way of accountability for the Department of Human Services, that it was limiting the amount that was recoverable at that time. And I think that's clear from...
So they would negotiate better deals?
Presumably, yes. I mean, again... I don't, Your Honor, believe that the statute is unambiguous. I believe that the district court correctly applied, based on the clear and unambiguous definition of medical assistance, that the district court correctly held that federal and state law require the appellant and intervener to file a claim, but that claim is limited. The use of capitation payments is merely an interplay of us using payments or the amount or the basis of the claim. No one is disputing that portion of the capitation payments is not the payment for medical assistance. What I'm saying that the statute clearly provides is that it requires that the medical assistance themselves are not actually the payments. It's the services themselves that are rendered. And that's what the court held at the district level. I want to make note, there's a discussion of a few cases that I wanted to highlight, one of which in particular is comes out of Massachusetts, and it's this Trockey decision that appellant and intervener sort of hang their hat on, that this supports that capitation payments are wholly recoverable. There's a problem, several problems with that case, aside the fact that we're not in Massachusetts, the second being that the Trockey case declined to even address that issue because the case was reprimanded based on a notice requirement. They didn't even get to the substance of whether capitation payments are recoverable.
And your client isn't contesting notice.
Correct. Correct. And unlike in Minnesota, in Massachusetts, they have a all-costs approach, which means that they don't have to delineate if their payments can fall into those three buckets that Minnesota has articulated it must fall in. So taken together.
Massachusetts has what Minnesota had.
Correct.
Before the amendments.
Exactly, Your Honor. Taken together, Minnesota law provides that the recovery is limited to the services identified in 256B.0625 rendered to the recipient. Here, as found by the district court and based on the stipulated and undisputed evidence, many of the capitation payments seek to recover were not actually related to long-term care services rendered to the decedent. Claimant's claim is appropriately limited to that $8,806.84, which reflects the actual amount of services rendered to the recipient that consisted of long-term care services. I want to shift now just briefly and reiterate that I do not believe that the statute is ambiguous, both on the federal and the state side, and that the district court correctly held that 256B.15 limits the recovery. But for sake of argument, if we're going to go down the route and discuss a potential ambiguous interpretation, I think the canons of construction under statute 645.16 favor the same interpretation. First and foremost, one of the canons is to look at the former law. Well, we see the difference in the former law. The second is to look at the legislative and administrative interpretation of the statute. There's no more clear of an administrative interpretation of that statute than the bulletin issued by the Department of Human Services themselves subsequent to those changes. Last but not least, although I don't think it's applicable because we don't get there, I think it's important to acknowledge the policy implications. There's been a red herring thrown that suggesting that Minnesota is not in compliance with federal law could jeopardize millions of dollars. First, there's been no basis to support that. Second, the capitation rate between the appellant and the MCO does not allow the appellant to circumvent the clear language of the statute. It's an unfortunate circumstance that, in this instance, the cost spending and the cost waste, frankly, has been highlighted by the county and the Department of Human Services. That result is not an issue for my client or an estate similarly situated to my client to bear. The state shifting the risk does not mean there's a blanket ability to recover those capitation payments. The state is now attempting to recover its costs pursuant to the provider contract, not pursuant to Minnesota law. And as a result, we reiterate that the district court correctly held that federal and state law allow the appellant to recover portions of the capitated payment, and they correctly held that the narrow definition of Minnesota Statute 256B.15 provides that they can only recover the portion of the capitated payments attributable to the services rendered.
Thank you, Ms. Kim.
Thank you.
Mr. Huff?
I'd like to pick up on where Judge Connolly left off during my principal argument, and essentially I think what you were asking is, how is this fair? And so in answering that question, I would point the court to two specific provisions of Chapter 256B that have not been talked about today. First, the legislators expressed the policy that medical assistance recipients use their own assets to pay for their share of the cost of care due to their enrollment in the program. And so that's found at Minnesota statutes.
How is the state not doing that? Again, if it's the services.
I think going back to how medical assistance is defined with the payment, Your Honor. The statute that I was referencing there is 256B.15 subdivision 1A. The legislature has also stated that, quote, all laws, rules, and regulations governing or involved in with the recovery of medical assistance shall be liberally construed, and that's found at Minnesota Statute 256B.15 subdivision 1A4. And so I think when considering those two...
Well, liberally construed to mean what? To make sure that people get their care? I'm all for that since I'm 65.
Right, and I think that when you look at the purpose of the recovery system is that to essentially make sure that others who are receiving medical assistance are able to do so based on the, you know, the recovery, so it perpetuates the system. I think that looking at those things as a whole.
Well, but Subdivision 1 is talking about someone to use their assets to pay their share of the cost of their care. How is the MCO payments that apparently far exceeded the actual value of services rendered, why is it fair to attribute that as Ms. Eklund's share of the cost of her care?
And, Your Honor, are you referring to the $66,000 or the $113,000 amount?
I'm talking right now about the argument that Respondents' Counsel made that, you know, to the extent capitation payments represent payments over which the recipient of the services has no control, right? The fact that the state decides to make capitation payments, which sometimes are going to result in paying more than the services actually rendered to the recipient. And so I'm trying to tie that back to Subdivision 1, which you cited to us, that says, yes, we do require medical assistance recipients to use their assets to pay their share of the cost of their care. And why would we, I mean, how is it your interpretation of the reimbursement limitations consistent with the notion of someone paying their share of their care, the cost of their care?
And, Your Honor, I see that my time is about
to answer Judge Bjorkman's question.
Expire, but my answer would be just briefly that she did receive the benefits of having that coverage, and so that would be my answer. And for the reasons stated and the reasons in the briefing, I would ask that this court reverse the district court.
I know the time is run.
Go right ahead, Judge. Go right ahead, Judge Klapak.
Your Honor, I think that's a bit of a red herring that was raised by appellee. You're talking about the all costs.
I'm asking the question.
So the all
costs. What do you think the legislature intended when it made that change in 2017?
I think that the legislature intended to limit the recovery of certain categories of care and not necessarily the form of payment that could be recovered. So that's the fee-for-service arrangement versus the capitation payment. I don't think that they were intending to limit the recovery of capitation payments. I think they were more talking about the categories of care themselves. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Anderson, you'll have the last word.
Thank you, Your Honor. I want to start where Judge Bjorkman asked my colleague over here. Why is this fair to recoup from the estate? It's fair because Ms. Eklund requested this coverage every year. There is value in knowing that you have long-term services and supports coverage, even if you don't need it, in case of exigent services or circumstances. It's the same reason that we all pay. She received notice that the capitation payment portion that was attributable to long-term services and supports would be recovered from her estate after she died. I think that when she reapplied every year for that coverage and received the notice, that yes, that sort of knowledge is imputed once you receive the notice and you continue to ask for coverage on that basis.
Well, when I get the notices, I'll have to read them a lot more carefully in a second. I have one question.
Sure.
Let's say the services she actually received were a dollar. And let's say, again, the premiums, you know, were $500,000. You're still going to go after her for the $500?
The estate, yes, Your Honor. And that's because, again, this is coverage that she applied for every year.
What if it was $1 million versus a dollar of services?
The federal statutes require us to go to recover the amount of capitation payments paid to provide the covered services in this case. And I would note
under
that
under my hypothetical, don't you think that's exactly what the legislature was trying to prevent?
I
get it. You know, if you've got some $5 million home in Lake Minnetonka and you're setting up for medical assistance, you know, you take your chances. That it's not this case. And I guess my concern is that the legislature, I think, by making the change that Judge Klapaki was referring to, was trying to kind of balance, you know, everything, which is, yep, you know, we're going to get something back. We're not going to let you just, you know, get off the hook. But with the change, also trying to say, but you know what? We're going to look to the state to negotiate better contracts with Medicare. And then if they don't, well, you know, that's Medica's problem, not the state's, and we're not going to punish the taxpayer. Now, why is that version of history crazy?
I don't think it's crazy, to be clear, Your Honor. I do think that it misinterprets the statute. I think I agree with the respondent that the amount of capitation that can be recovered is limited. I agree. We are no longer in an all-cost state. The limitation, though, is in what the services or what category of services we're talking about. For example, we don't know, just based on the record of this case and what is recoverable by the state, what else Ms. Eklund may have used medical assistance for. It could have been oncology coverage. I don't know. We don't know how much was actually paid out. We know what's recoverable, and it's the actuarially determined amount that is attributable to long-term services and supports. That's the limitation. That is all that Hennepin County has sought. That's what the district court found. That was not challenged as clear error. So the limitation is there. I think we all agree to long-term services and supports, but the cost of those long-term services and supports includes the cost of the coverage that gives you the price that you get for each service at the end of the day. I'm out of time, so unless the panel has any other questions.
No, thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Ms. Anderson. Thank you, Ms. King. The matter was very well briefed and well argued. We will issue our decision in 90 days. Honor.